Welcome to PEMA On Demand, the podcast that highlights the stories, challenges, and successes of alumni from the Physician Executive MBA program at the University of Tennessee. I'm your host, Dr. Norm Chapin. Today's episode is titled, The Heart of Innovation, How a Cardiologist is Redefining Care in New Mexico. And that's not just a clever metaphor. My guest is Dr. Amanda Ryan, an interventional cardiologist, entrepreneur, podcast host, and graduate of the PEMA class of 2023. Dr. Ryan didn't just choose rural medicine, she committed to transforming it. In this conversation, we explore how she built a thriving independent cardiology practice and an ambulatory surgery center in rural New Mexico, how she seeded her own foundation to create a local healthcare workforce pipeline, and how PEMA helped her take her mission from vision to reality. We'll also talk about her podcast, Homegrown Heart, her plans to write a book and go to law school, and the fine art of leading with both business strategy and a relentless heart. So let's jump into this powerful and inspiring conversation with Dr. Amanda Ryan. Welcome to PEMA On Demand, Physician Leaders Making a Difference. I'm Norm Chapin, your host. PEMBA On Demand is produced for physicians seeking professional development. We discuss a wide range of topics on the podcast, including successful innovations in a variety of healthcare disciplines, current issues in healthcare career development, and healthcare leadership. I will be interviewing physician leaders from the U.S. and from other countries, most of whom graduated from the Physician Executive MBA program at the University of Tennessee. The information provided in this podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute professional advice. The views and opinions expressed by the host and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the University of Tennessee or any other organization. By listening to this podcast, you acknowledge and agree to these terms. Whether you're sipping your morning coffee, commuting to the hospital, or just looking for a dose of inspiration, we've got you covered. We hope you will take full advantage of these practical, insightful, and relevant discussions designed to help physician leaders get new and build upon existing leadership skills and perspectives. PEMBA On Demand will allow you to be an even bigger force for good in healthcare. Hello, Amanda. I'm happy to welcome you to PEMBA On Demand today. I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to join me.
Yes, thanks for having me, Norm. I appreciate the chance to talk about rural health and our program and cardiology and PEMBA and all the other things.
Well, I'm excited to get your perception on all of those things. But I thought maybe we could start by just having you tell us a little bit about what inspired you to build your career in rural New Mexico.
So my grandfather had a weak heart, had his first heart attack in his 30s. Thought he had shoulder pain working out at the job site where he was a construction worker, built bridges and buildings in Illinois, Southern Illinois. And turns out that was really his anginal equivalent. By the time they figured out really what was the status of his heart, you know, his ejection fraction was less than 10%, barely moved. And there weren't as many options as there are today. He kind of went 3 to 3.5 hours to a decent cardiologist, and he would get admitted repeatedly with just a little bit of diuretic and try to get him out of heart failure. And, you know, that was just kind of an ongoing process for him. So, you know, he really held on to make it through my college graduation. That was part of his goal. He didn't quite make it, but I did promise him that I would be a cardiologist in a small town so that people didn't have to go 3.5 hours to quality cardiology care. And so that when this opportunity came up, I realized it was really an opportunity to do that.
Now, was this an opportunity that you took advantage of completion of your fellowship?
No, and I wouldn't necessarily advise that. It's interesting. As a young female interventional cardiologist, plenty of options as far as where I was going to go and what I was going to do. I interviewed a lot of places in New Mexico, Kentucky, Tennessee, you know, really looking at building programs there and things like that. But I think what I realized is that I wasn't ready to be out there, quote unquote, on my own without strong senior partners right after fellowship. So I did 6 to 7 years in Florida prior to taking on this opportunity. And my former partner and a senior partner for the other group in town where I practiced, which was in Titusville, Florida, which I thought was rural, you know, 40 minutes outside of Orlando. Not exactly. But, you know, they were really there to help guide me and continue to get my skills where they needed to go so that I could really do something like this. So I'd say it's a good mid-career choice. It's a tough choice for right out of fellowship.
So besides learning that rural Florida isn't rural New Mexico, what were some of the other biggest barriers or some of your large barriers that you faced as you set up a practice? And I know eventually you set up an ambulatory surgery center in New Mexico as well.
Yes, I did. You know, when I really was, it took me 6 to 9 months, Norm, to really make this decision. It was not a decision that I made lightly to come out here. I felt very compelled that it was a need, but I realized the uphill battle it would really be setting up that program. And it wasn't just, you know, a lot of these large systems think you just stick a cath lab in, some equipment and a physician in there, and there you go, you've got a program. But my mother is a healthcare executive. I've grown up on that side of healthcare, watching what really goes in administratively to building programs. And I knew what an undertaking it truly was, the manpower that was going to be required, the leadership skills I was going to have to put to use, the resources I was going to have to pull. I had a grasp of that. And we had built a pretty solid program in Florida, too, at two of the places. We went to three hospitals in Florida. Two of them did not have surgical backup, and one of them did. So when I first was graduating from fellowship, that was a big deal. We were used to bringing the CT surgeon down to the cath lab often and making joint decisions as far as what we're going to do with patients. So it was a big deal back then, and that's really why my former partner moved from Chicago to Florida, just to really make that decision, build a program without surgical backup for emergency cardiac cases. So now to think we're going to move from that to, again, being 3.5 hours from a major tertiary referral center. And that was really the reality out here. So you weren't 30 minutes from downtown Orlando. You know, you were 3.5 hours from Lubbock, El Paso, 4.5 hours from Albuquerque. There were things like it was too windy to fly. It was too hot. The pilots were over hours. There's 4 air transport companies out here. Sometimes they literally would all 4 be out on calls at the same time. So those are things I really had never experienced. To get my time in Florida, we had a very clear-cut path for anyone that had an issue, immediately getting them to Orlando, to Daytona Beach. And so we did not have that option out here, and I had to learn how to adjust what I did based on that.
So having those cardiothoracic surgery resources so remote from you, so far away, especially with it sounds like the transportation not always being the most reliable or available, what techniques have you had to learn in your practice to manage patients until you can get them to a CT surgeon?
Right. You've got to have qualified staff. Our cath lab staff, they're active participants. They are not people that I just tell what to do. You know, we are an active team, and they really do know how to help me manage those patients. Also, utilizing your resources, I made sure and went to meet the cardiothoracic surgeons and interventional cardiologists at all the programs around in Lubbock, in El Paso, in Albuquerque, so they knew when I called them, they could trust exactly what I was saying, and they could help me co-manage the patient so that they could then get transported to their facility when appropriate.
So it sounds like one of the issues that you recognized was that this isn't just going to be an invasive cardiologist practicing in a vacuum. You really needed to build a workforce and a team. And I know from talking with you that one of your major efforts has focused on creating a pipeline of workers, qualified workers in your catchment area and in your market. Tell us how you went about that and some of the successes behind that
yes,
story.
Definitely. So we do have a local community college that has a nursing program. It was part of NMSU, and then it became its own local college. So we've really worked with them aggressively at setting up a nursing program that was a flex learning nursing program, actually, so that these students, often their medical assistants, they can go to school, they can work from like 6 to noon, and then they can take their class from 3 until 7 in the afternoon. It does come with two additional semesters. And that was, again, a focus of creating our foundation, which is called Partners in Heart Health, with a major goal of supplying grants to further the education of our staff.
So was the funding for that program mainly tuition by the students, but also some grant support from the community, or where did that grant support come from?
Yeah, so it started with just myself funding it and then picking up on other, you know, some of the challenges of that. We've realized a lot of grant opportunities want you to have 3 years of your 501 status before, you know, they're really ready to move forward with support. So just starting to form all of those connections, really getting out there in the community. We're an oil and gas industry community and surrounding area. So really getting out there, you know, Partners in Heart Health, not just being a name, but really being the goal is to partner with our community. So that the more they can understand about what we're trying to do, then they'll be more likely to support our, you know, our endeavors.
Can you tell us an example or maybe a story of one of the graduates from your program that has really taken advantage of this opportunity and really gone on to heights that maybe you didn't anticipate?
We're still waiting on our first student to finish the programs, but we have her marked. Again, my mom is out here in her semi-retirement helping us as our director of nursing in our surgical center. And we have earmarked our future director of nursing who's in the program currently.
Great. Great.
So yeah, we've even started grassroots prior to that. We've had 25 students obtain their certified medical assistant through our teaching program as well. So we've had 25, a lot of the local medical assistants at the different physician offices and hospital systems are not necessarily certified. So we've run our own certification program, getting national certification. We do about a 6-month training course with them, and we've had 100% pass rate first time on our test.
Wow, that's great. For a rural area, that's a huge success. I've worked in several rural areas, and just finding qualified personnel to work in the office without what you've done is very challenging. I really applaud you for that. That's fantastic.
It is. I mean, you can sit back and say what we don't have, or you can be an active member. The people that help lead my team here are people, they've been here with me for 8 to 10 years as part of the whole process. They all started in the reception position. Several of them are at a director level now. They're cardiovascular specialists working in the cath lab. They've gone on to do all kinds of different roles. And our approach is not just the traditional 4-year education or even the 2 to 3 year degrees, but also a lot of certifications that we encourage people to get along the way, as well as professional development training. It's important to learn all of those clinical skills, but it's also important to learn leadership skills. And some people are more natural at it, and some people can get there in different ways. But I think everyone needs professional development training, which is, you know, a great thing we get at PEMBA. And even when you see a group of physicians, you think of us as leaders, and many of us are, but a lot of those skills are not second nature to everyone.
Yes, I agree. I agree. That's something that I found very valuable in the PEMBA program as well, as just the amount of soft skills that they taught that really helped as I moved into leadership positions.
Definitely. I went through a very challenging time during some of my MBA as far as just going away from the hospital system and to getting this program going. And my life coach, career coach was very valuable in giving me some good insight into handling a real complex situation.
That's great. One of the things I'd like to ask you a few more questions about. So it sounds like you started putting your own money towards this initiative. Was there a specific type of structure that you formed to help your commitment to that endeavor?
Yes. So I had an experienced grant writer that came and she had ran foundations before to help us get our tax structure set up for it appropriately. I then selected board members from the community that had been on several boards before. One had been in the banking world, one had been in healthcare. So I tried to get a good variety of people. We also have potash mines out here. I took one of the executives from the potash mine and had him be involved in our board. So really just in creating that structure, we did it early and appropriate. You know, a lot of people, again, some grants you're only eligible if you're a not-for-profit, but definitely you want your 501(c) status as well. So we got that very quickly. We actually got that within 4 months, which is kind of unheard of, to be honest. But if you're true to your mission and We made sure we had a good Founders Five that was out there telling everybody what we were really trying to do. I feel like that helped with our interaction with the IRS as well. They want to know what you're trying to do. And, you know, not that some of these are a little more tax shelter, and they want to know that you're really, what you're really doing, you have to stick with what your mission is. And we really built it that way from the beginning.
Have you had to pivot the core mission of the foundation since you created it?
Not so far. We've really been able to, again, helping patients that were in need, well as our staff, were really the core missions from the beginning. Obviously, the more money we bring in, the more we're going to be able to meet those missions. But I do think that we've been able to stay true to our core.
And how much money is being raised for the foundation that comes outside of your own personal finances that you're putting into the foundation?
Yeah, I think about in our first year, about 100 to 150,000 that came from outside sources.
Great.
And I think that's pretty good for year one, and we're into year two now.
Yeah. And do you have specific measures of success or KPIs that you're looking to measure as you determine how well the foundation is working and achieving its mission?
Yes. And I do think some of those KPIs we have had to adjust on the whole grants. I think, you know, we really do need the 3 years on some of that. We've worked with Mackenzie Scott's group a lot on, and they're really good. They do a thing called Cause Camp. We've been active with that. We've also, our foundation director has been a speaker at that. They let you come and they really research your foundation and see what your goals are. They help match you up to like where they think grants will be appropriate in the future. They'll also, I believe they will be a good partner for us going forward. So we've also thought outside the box in some ways, like Kendra Scott makes and sells jewelry in Texas in our region. We've had her come out to several of our different events that are community events. And then she gives us like 25% of her sales, as well as keeps it online for a couple weeks after. We've made several thousand dollars on different occasions from events that she's done for us. So I think it's just really thinking, I think sometimes when you start a foundation, everyone's looking for the home run. And there is quite a bit of oil field, and there's people that have a decent amount of money out here. There's several other foundations that donate a lot of money, but there's also a lot of great causes, and you've got to kind of figure out where your niche fits and where you can really, you know, we're just not asking the same people, the same companies every time. I mean, as a business owner, I want to support everything, but you also have to kind of choose where your priorities are sometimes. Is it better to donate to 4 or 5 causes as opposed to kind of water down and donate to 20 or 25? So just making those decisions. So we've made different partnerships.
So for people who want to get involved with your foundation, what is the name of your foundation and how can they help support this work?
Yeah, so it's called Partners in Heart Health.
Okay.
And we have a website. It'll explain donations to you. We have a lot of events that we talk about on our social media where you can either do things, you know, in person or you can do things over the internet as well. So we have plenty of options with that. Tammy Wacker is our foundation director. She's always available to reach out, sit down with people, talk about what we're really doing. We have a lot of literature that explains our goals. So yeah, any of that's available on our website.
Great. And I'll put links to your website and to Tammy's contact information, if that's okay with you, in the show notes so that people can access that if they're interested.
Yep.
Great.
That'll be great.
This podcast is sponsored by the Physician Executive MBA program at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville's Haslam College of Business. In less than one calendar year, this program will equip you with valuable business acumen and leadership development not found in traditional medical school curriculum. Are you ready to join the longest-running physician-only MBA program in the country and a network of nearly 1,000 PEMBA graduates? Visit tiny.utk.edu/podcast for information about this exciting opportunity. And now we'll return to the episode. I want to pivot a little bit. You're also a podcaster. I don't know how you do all the things that you do, honestly, but you.
Sure, that's a question I get asked often by anybody that gets even close to what we have going on out here is that how do you, and I'm like, oh, I'm not really sure, but we just put one foot in front of the other.
Yeah, well, it's pretty amazing as we talked in preparation for this show, but Maybe you could talk a little bit about what inspired you to launch Homegrown Heart, which is the name of your podcast. Yeah. And I'll put links to that in the show note as well. And tell us a little bit about the story behind the name and the episodes and what you focus on in your podcast.
Yeah. So my Homegrown Heart was really created as a patient outreach source. You know, often treating such a large volume of patients that I do out here, I don't always have time to explain every single thing to patients in the way that I wish I did. We have a shortage of primary care providers. Everyone out here does the very best that they can, but every quality provider gets full and a panel that's busting at the seams, if you will, very quickly. So I really hoped that it could be an education piece for patients so that they could kind of understand further questions they might have either before their visit or after, trying to kind of explain what we're really doing, what different cardiac tests, what are different cardiac diseases, what can they do, really focusing on those modifiable risk factors as far as what can they do to decrease their risk. So that was the real goal of my podcast. And we've had meetings lately just trying to pivot a little bit on that, because I'll be honest, Norm, you haven't asked yet, but I avoided the TikTok and some of the, you know, we put things on Facebook, but I've avoided some of the social media, like, oh, I don't really want to do that. I want to keep it a little more serious and do these 40 to 45 minute long. And the truth is the patients all follow my TikTok, but they're not very good at following my podcast.
So you're planning on pivoting a little bit to some different social media platforms.
Well, at least pulling it in, I feel as though like they're all following my TikTok and waiting for me to put something out. So even if I can just put it out, I've also realized that for my patient population, maybe 20 to 25 minutes are a little better. And they've also done a lot better for the ones that I had a guest as opposed to when I was just talking, trying to explain things myself. So just trying to really look back at what was about the first year of my podcast and just saying what was successful, what wasn't. You know, I'm not out here just to do things to hear myself talk or my 5 minutes of fame. You know, that's not the goal. The goal is really to shape rural healthcare as best I can. And I'm looking for platforms that kind of spread that wider. And so when I don't think I've had as much success with my podcast as I would have liked. I wanted a podcast. I have one. So we've accomplished that. That's great. Mm-hmm. But recently at our meeting, we were like, okay, we're not really accomplishing as much as we'd like. So trying to figure out how to really get that right population and how to appeal to them in a way that they really get something out of it. I think I have a natural sense of humor too, but these are serious topics, but I think sometimes using that, I have to keep people engaged. And I realize like my TikToks and my short Facebook videos, they tend to be silly. I don't know, you know, I did a Dancing with the Stars for another charity foundation this year for the United Way of Carlsbad. And I'm not a dancer, but they brought in professionals from Utah to help get us up to speed. And that was very successful. We raised $85,000 for the United Way as part of that fundraiser. So, and I think it cost $35,000 to put on. So it was a $50,000 profit. And that was a very good event. Mm-hmm. So just trying to kind of learn from those things about thinking outside the box. And like I said, I think in some ways, just being funny is kind of appropriate for people.
Well, I think it helps people to see you as a passionate person, right? It's they're serious topics, as you said, but I think people value having a physician, especially an invasive cardiology specialist, who they can relate to.
Yeah, relatable is definitely important in this field.
Yeah. Has there been anything else that really surprised you, good or bad, about sharing your voice publicly? Any reaction from colleagues or the public that surprised you?
Everyone has been pretty open to learning and hearing it, and not too much criticism. I try not to really be too politically motivated one way or the other and just try to kind of stick to the facts. I did a CBS Evening News interview with John Dickerson, and I kind of, you know, about the potential Medicaid cuts and how they would affect our rural patients. And, you know, sometimes they ask things like, well, do you think the state should do a little more, or do you? And, you know, I just try to give my opinions that are honest, but I really do try to stay out of the politics to a level. But I do think as a physician, we've got to be involved in public policy. Because if we don't help shape it, it just shapes around us and we're left out here complaining of what we have, but were we really active participants in shaping that policy? It is my experience with our senators and representatives that they do want to know, that they're often not informed about what's really going on out here, be this at the state level or the federal level. And so getting in their ear to really say, this is how that potential bill will affect me and my patients and our staff. I think that's important. And as a physician's like, where do you find, you know, you're trying to find time to close notes and you're trying to find time to take care of patients and you're on call and you're doing podcasts and you're, you know what I mean? Like you just, but trying to utilize technology in the forms of AI and other ways to make me more efficient so that I can then have time to really try to reach a wider scale on a public policy level. That's also an important goal for me.
So do you feel that the podcast and the interviews that you're doing and that type of thing have given you access to politicians and officials that are crafting policy in New Mexico and in the country?
I think it's a start, but I think I'm at a point where getting them, some of them actually as a guest on my podcast and stuff is going to be very important. So that's why when I kind of think, how do I shape this next? We thought about potentially going in segments, you know, with these five have one focus, the next five have this focus. So kind of doing episode based where you're building on it for 4 to 5 sessions, with some of them being, again, prevention and identification of cardiac disease, some of them being about the different tests we do in cardiology, but then having 4 or 5 episodes that are really focused on public policy and doing some interviews that are relevant.
So how did you select the name Homegrown Heart? What does that mean to you? And why did you feel that was a great name for your podcast?
I think I'm a Southern Illinois girl that's became a rural New Mexican girl. And, you know, just trying to focus on the fact that, you know, staying, I may not be from here, but the idea is when you're from a rural area, you're very in touch, or you can be very in touch with what the problems are and what your patients are really dealing with. You know, to try to do as much in their hometown as possible is a major goal. Telling these patients they have to go, like my grandfather on the other side of my family, he got multiple myeloma and he had to go to inner city St. Louis to get treatment. I was training there at the time. And I mean, I can't tell you the stress that my grandfather and grandmother had traveling into St. Louis. It was like New York City to them because they were very comfortable in their small town, really had never driven outside of it. So the idea of going to get care in St. Louis was as overwhelming to them as having cancer, quite honestly.
Yeah. Well, you know,
so my homegrown concept is to bring as much care here as you can. The podcast idea is to spread knowledge here as best that they can. Because you live in a rural area, it doesn't mean you shouldn't have access with all the technology we have. You should still have access to great care and great explanations, I feel like.
Well, I think so too. And I think it is a barrier for people to get good care when they feel that the only option for them is to travel outside the community where they're comfortable in. So that's a great mission. That's a great mission. So I wonder if we could talk for a few minutes about, so we've talked about your podcast, we've talked about starting your foundation, we've talked about developing an ambulatory surgery center in rural New Mexico. But on top of all that, you made a decision to commit yourself to an MBA program, a physician executive MBA program for an entire year back in 2022. So what drew you to Pemba? And at that point in your career, how did you think it would impact your career?
Of course, I have to say, and I'm sure you hear this a lot, but Tom Brown, he could not be more amazing at really convincing me to do something I had wanted to do. I had applied back in 2014 even, and I had considered it, but I was still paying off student loans. And I really wanted to be able to, I was going to be paying for this on my own. And I really wanted to be able to pay for it outright, I'll be honest. So I did not want to get more student loans. So that was a factor for me. I had a very high student loan debt in the beginning. And I really wanted to wait until I had that taken care of and was able to save the money and pay for it up front. So that was an important goal for me. I've been chief of staff and chief medical officer at different hospitals that I've been affiliated with. Sat in a lot of board meetings, and I had a very good understanding of basic finance and healthcare. Otherwise, money in, money out equals overhead equals what you've got left at the end. But leverage ratios and, you know, all kinds of different cost of average cost of capital and all of those things, when you're going into some of that, I really didn't understand some of the terminology. My sister's an attorney, and I do still talk to her, although not that often. I'm just kidding. No, but what you realize that we all have our own jargon, the same as medicine. If we go just talking complete interventional cardiology terms to somebody else, be that a patient or even maybe a psychiatrist, they're not necessarily going to understand everything I'm saying. I'm not going to understand everything they're saying. That's how I felt about finance. I needed to level the playing field so that when somebody came to me with a P&L, that I could really fully understand where we were getting all those numbers.
So you mentioned earlier in the show the value you got from the leadership training, but it sounds like you also got a lot of benefit from the business or finance training.
Definitely, I did. I really gained a better understanding of securities and all the exchange and how I could really bring that into my own practice that I was developing. Also use it in interactions with hospitals and insurance companies and otherwise. So I felt like it was very valuable for all of those reasons.
And you got that training before you actually formalized your foundation as well, correct?
Yes, I did.
Did you find that training and that knowledge helpful as you set up your not-for-profit?
Yes, definitely. And my surgical center as well. I went private and from the hospital system in April of 2022. Mm. So I was already in PIMBA. And it was so it went along with that first year. And it was really as crazy of timing as it was perfect timing. As I learned, I was able to put a lot of what I was learning to immediate use. I got really good advice from my professors to utilize my real life, what I was doing in a lot of assignments. And so from a marketing standpoint, Amy Cathy, she was wonderful. Bruce Bain was my OAP advisor, and they were great. And they really helped me. This was a real life project. So they were really consultants for my project as I went along as well.
So was this your OAP to set up in private practice? Great.
It was.
So that sounds like it paid off big dividends for you.
Definitely.
And how long had you been employed by the healthcare organization before you went independent?
6 years.
Okay. Okay. And are you still a solo cardiologist in your own practice right now, or have you hired advanced practice professionals or another cardiologist?
Yeah. So I have several advanced practice professionals and really looking at what is our next service line. We're really going, you know, where are we going next with this? Because obviously out here, again, this is a marketing blue ocean. You're going to have it. The question is going to be, how are you going to manage it? So figuring out how to manage that growth, both from a provider and staff standpoint, is really a big focus right now.
Okay. Well, that's great. That's great information. I do like to ask every PEMBA alum that I have on the show what their favorite memory of PEMBA is.
I think their relationships, honestly, I learned a lot from all of the instructors, so many different things, but the relationships that I built, the connections, I met a group of really amazing women who were still able to give each other advice and input, and we're in very different careers as far as the specifics, but really those relationships, it's just great to have someone to bounce ideas off of.
Have you stayed in contact with some of your classmates over the last few years?
Yes, definitely.
Great. Great. And how about the professors? Do you still call them up for consulting information, advice?
No, I try to keep them updated every now and then about how things are going and stuff. So they've all definitely been there to cheer me on in my project. And, you know, I think they maybe knew better than I did what I was really undertaking in this day and age. You know, it's interesting. The hospital systems had the opinion that I was naive. And I was like, oh, I don't have a naive bone in my body. I did. I was naive in some ways. It's been a 5-year eye-opening, you know, sometimes I do believe that God shows you what you need to see when you need to see it. You know, Norm, if I saw all of this completely eyes wide open, I don't know that I would have done it. That's a fair statement. I'm extremely happy that I did. And I think sometimes the stuff gets revealed to you as you need it to be. Right. For example, again, I left the hospital with about 2,000 to 2,500 patient panel. Again, we have a 14,000 patient panel in 3 years. This is our fourth year. So learning to everything I thought would occur has occurred, but it's occurred at a much faster pace. Also, the payer insurance market has become really challenging to navigate. Mm-hmm. So there have been a lot of things there I've had to pivot on different structures. I mean, I want to provide the care for as low a price as possible. Unfortunately, the cost of providing care keeps going up, but reimbursements keep going down. So there has to be a way to meet that. Nothing else is going down, not your utilities, not anything else. So how are we going to match the reimbursements declining at the same time the cost to provide care keeps going up? And I mean, I do feel like healthcare in America is in a crisis there with how or where are we going to intersect that?
Yeah. You know, one of the things I've heard from other physicians who have moved from an employee status to an independent status, but remained in the same geographic area, is that it has sometimes created some tension, or maybe better call it friction, between their previous employer. How did you navigate that? And did you find that to be true in your case?
Yeah, there was a lawsuit involved and it was a little bit of a struggle, but we're at a good space now.
Okay.
So I really didn't let it affect me in the sense of I was getting my MBA. I was taking care of patients. I was building a practice. I had so many things going on that I really didn't allow myself to be too affected by the negativity. But I think ultimately they realized that I was committed to the area and I was not going anywhere. So that'd probably be better to try to work with me than against me.
Great. Well, I'm glad that that worked out. I know that not all separations have been amicable in the long run.
Yes.
But it sounds like yours has ended up in a pretty amicable situation.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah. And again, we're all trying to get to the same goal, which is providing good care, you know, at a reasonable rate. I mean, I think we all have the same goal. Just sometimes personal and financial things get in people's way. And I'm just not somebody that's guided by that. I'm guided by a vision and a mission. And as long as I remain true to that, I feel like I can usually work through things.
Mm-hmm. Is there something that you learned in that sort of friction point in your life that if you could go back and do it a different way, that you feel like you learned something that would have allowed that to be a little bit of a more peaceful transition for you, but accomplish the same outcome?
I think I approached it probably about as good as I could have. Mm-hmm. I think there were other people involved that probably could have approached it better. I mean, there's always things any of us could have done a little different.
Sure.
I think I had a little more experience with some of that than some of the other people involved. And so I think, you know, just figuring out that communication is always the key. There is a little bit of how do you reveal something like that? When do you reveal it? There's legalities of it. There's contracts and clauses and I think sometimes we've got to stick within those rules, but we also need to realize that, you know, we're all human beings and just maintaining a certain level of respect. I mean, my entire time, I kind of guided myself with respond, don't react. And I think that very good input that I was encouraged through PEMBA. And I really stuck to that. I responded. I did not react in every instance I could. Yeah. I think that allowed the relationship to come out on the positive end eventually.
Well, that's good. It is sometimes frustrating when you're in these contractual relationships, if you want to call a contract a relationship, but I guess it is. But, you know, there's always advice that we get from attorneys that seems to minimize the value of the human relationship that we have with people that we've worked with a long time. And sometimes I feel like if we could just sit down over a cup of coffee, it might work out a little bit better than having messages going back and forth between our attorneys sometimes. But
definitely.
Yeah.
And I think at the end of the day, like in our lawsuit, the only thing that kind of happened is we both paid attorneys and then we kind of got through it ourselves eventually. Sometimes I'm like, I don't know, you know, which I don't think is that uncommon in other personal things I've been through or professional.
Yeah.
So sometimes I think, you know, sometimes you can't really take a business issue and make it too emotionally charged. I think when that happens, then you start making bad decisions that aren't in best interest of the parties or ultimately in healthcare, the patients.
Right, right. No, I agree with you. So I wonder, there's two questions I have that I wanted to ask you. And I wondered if there was something that you believe about medicine or physician leadership that most people might disagree with, kind of a controversial opinion that you've learned in your journey.
Yeah, I think, you know, APPs, I think advanced practice providers, I don't see them as, I think there's some of us that feel like they're replacing physicians or they can practice completely independent. Nurse practitioners can in New Mexico. And I have my own opinion on that. I feel like in a subspecialty practice like mine, they are very valuable. And I feel like they're meant to work in conjunction with me, with a physician. But I do think they're very valuable to the system. So I think different people have a different opinion on that. But I enjoy those relationships. I enjoy teaching. And I think that those are important relationships to have. I also think in our rural areas, quite honestly, like, you know, there's 1,100 cardiologists in Houston, and there's 2 to 3 in our 500,000 catchment area out here when there should be 10 to 12.
Yeah.
So in some ways, we want to, as physicians, complain about the fact that APPs are getting more rights or more privileges, but then we're not always willing to go to those areas and that are in need as well.
Right, right. Well, thank you for sharing that. My last question is, what is next for you? What is next for Dr. Amanda Ryan? What are we going to see in your career, your professional development as we look back at it 5 years from today?
Yes. So again, yeah. So when I look at, you know, I'm about to enter 50. So when I look at 50 to 60, you know, I've said I want to improve my Spanish, which is very important for my Hispanic population out here. I want to go to law school and I want to write a book. So in the next 10 years, those are all priorities. While really finding the right partners for my vision out here to help bring it, I'm brave enough to do what we've done, but humble enough to realize that this has amazing potential. And so trying to really figure out who I should work with physician-wise or management-wise to kind of really help me get it to the next level.
Well, I sense another podcast coming on in a few years, but really quickly,
definitely.
Do you know what your book is going to be about, what it's going to focus on?
Yeah, I think my book is definitely an autobiographical, how did I get here? This is an interesting story. And I can only give many people a bit of my life if I've only seen a piece of it. And so I think it's definitely a story of resilience. It's a story of keeping yourself moving forward after you've gotten, you know, knocked back a couple times, which I don't know anyone who really is at a place in life that they're really very fulfilled and satisfied, which I would say that I am, that hasn't faced a decent amount of adversity. And I'm in that category as well. And I think my story will be motivating to others. And that's what I would hope for it to be.
Well, that sounds exciting. Well, I do want to be kept posted on your progress on all of those plans.
Wonderful.
They're exciting. And I know that it would really be exciting for the alumni to kind of get updated on how you're doing. We could talk about what's motivating you to go to law school besides having a sister who's an attorney, but I'm sure it's deeper than that.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Great.
Contracts and just all kinds of things. Yeah. You know, like I said, I really want to change rural healthcare landscape on a broad scale. And I have a lot of ideas for how I can do that. I want this project to maintain forever, but not just totally dependent on Dr. Amanda Ryan. So really figuring out how to shift some of that responsibility to others and other physicians so that I can continue to grow in other ways.
Well, thank you for all that you've shared with us and with our audience. I really appreciate you taking the time. As I said earlier in the podcast, I'm amazed at the amount of balls that you keep in the air and all of the juggling that you have to do. But I really appreciate you taking time out for us and for sharing your story with us.
Thank you, Norm. I appreciate you. You have a great day.
That was Dr. Amanda Ryan, Pemba alum, physician executive, rural innovator, and the kind of leader who makes you pause and rethink what's possible. From creating jobs and access in underserved areas to training future clinicians, Amanda is showing what it looks like when purpose, passion, and Pemba come together. If her story inspired you, be sure to check out her podcast, Homegrown Heart, and her foundation, Partners in Heart Health. You'll find links in the show notes. And if you're a physician leader looking to build something bigger than yourself, maybe it's time to look into the Physician Executive MBA program at the University of Tennessee. Thanks for listening to Pemba on Demand. Be sure to subscribe and share this episode with a colleague who could use a dose of real-world innovation. And a reminder that you don't have to follow the usual path to make a real difference. Join us for episode 44 of Pemba on Demand in 2 weeks. My guest will be Dr. Joseph Nunu, sharing how burnout fueled his entrepreneurial journey. Until next time, I'm Norm Chapin.
Pemba on Demand is released biweekly, every other Thursday, and available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Castos, or Overcast. Please subscribe to the podcast on your favorite podcast player by clicking the subscribe button. Add Pemba On Demand to your podcast library today. I would also appreciate it if you could share the podcast with your friends or colleagues. You can also listen to our podcasts on our YouTube channel, www.youtube.com/@PembaOn-demand, all one word, no spaces. Please hit the like button and subscribe. Also, if you have any comments or questions regarding this or other episodes, please feel free to add them into the comment section on our YouTube channel. We love hearing from you and are happy to answer any questions you may have. I will add a link to our website and our YouTube channel in the show notes. The website is tiny.utk.edu/PembaOnDemand, all one word. There's no hyphen in that URL. You will find the links to the episodes there. Please also check the show notes for links that were discussed in the show today. Take good care of yourselves and become an even bigger force for good in healthcare.